So synthesis problem, you have two starting materials. You have ethanol and then this 5-carbon combination ketone alkene. And somehow you had to end up with something that had a total of 9 carbons. So we're going to do the same thing that we did with the previous round of synthesis problems, which let's start with the carbon framework first. So we have a 5-carbon fragment, 3 carbons of which are involved in functional groups. We can see that there's a functional group at the 2nd carbon in, where the ketone is. And in the product, we could identify a similar 5-carbon piece that also has some functionality at the 2nd position. Then we also have a new carbon-carbon bond that includes the end carbon of the 5-carbon piece, which would correspond to one of the 2 carbons of the double bond. So it looks like we've got here 2 Grignard type reactions, 2 carbon-carbon bond forming reactions. The only complication here is the fact that there's no alcohol at one of the new positions of the carbon-carbon bond, and we have a double bond instead at the other one. So part of this is simple, part of this is tricky, because the Grignard reaction, the Grignard part of it itself, hopefully you more easily recognize these days. And actually, I'm realizing in real life, I would probably have to accept this answer as well. I'm just now looking and realizing I really like the idea of the alkene there, but with what you know, you don't know how to direct it one way or the other, so I'll go back after the fact and admit, okay, so we don't have as much control as we would like at this step. But can we get up to this molecule somehow? Well, the really tricky part of this question is, can you get one Grignard reaction to happen without the other happening? Because what are you going to do if you have 2 different alcohols? One that you just need to completely get rid of, and then the other one that you need to eliminate somehow. Well, there's some sneakiness here as well, because what kind of alcohol would form at the position where the ketone started? Tertiary. So after a Grignard attacks that carbonyl, you end up with a tertiary alcohol. Can tertiary alcohols be oxidized? No. So looking at the alkene, alkenes can't react directly with Grignard reagents, so we're going to have to do something to convert it into a carbonyl source of some sorts. Or there is going to be a reaction that I show you after the review today that won't be on the exam that could also allow us to do another style of what looks like a Grignard, but instead of having to have a carbonyl, you could have just an alkyl halide. It's not an SN2 mechanism, but it's an alternate organometallic route. With what we've learned up through so far, though, one could imagine that we could try to put the functional group here at the end of the alkene, which we've already seen hydroboration oxidation as a way to do that. We could then maybe turn that into an aldehyde, which we could do a Grignard reaction on. So what kind of alcohol would that be, though, if we did make an aldehyde and then attack it? The alcohol that you would produce would be a secondary. Can you oxidize secondary alcohols? Can you oxidize tertiary alcohols? So here's the sneaky part of this sequence. We'll do both Grignard reactions because we'll be able to take advantage of the fact that one position is a secondary alcohol versus a tertiary. We'll be able to do it like this. So first, we want to do 2 Grignard reactions at once. We need to get the alkene to be something that can be attacked by a Grignard, so we need an aldehyde. So first, borane and THF. followed by hydrogen peroxide and sodium hydroxide. That'll make a terminal alcohol, which we can then oxidize with PCC and pyridine to form the aldehyde. If we're doing a Grignard reaction, we need a Grignard reagent. So since I tend to make alkyl bromides, I'll do so again here using PBr3. React with magnesium and ether. That will make our Grignard reagent. And I'm going to throw two in front of here because, and I would make sure to word this correctly with whatever question I'm going to ask. In some previous versions of quizzes or exams, I might have said assume only one equivalent of each of the starting compounds. But if I were going to give you a problem like this, I would make sure to word it so that you could use as much of either of the starting materials as you wanted to. So if we take two equivalents of the Grignard plus this combination aldehyde ketone, combine them, we'll initially get a dialkoxide. Which we could work up with acid to make the dialkohol. Here's where the sneakiness comes in. If you oxidize with Jones reagent, one of the alcohols stays an alcohol because it can't be oxidized. The other alcohol can be oxidized, turns into a ketone. And now I'm going to use the same trick that we used in a previous example, which if I react with hydrazine followed by sodium hydroxide, that's the Wolff-Kishner reduction. Base won't do anything to the alcohol, so the only thing that happens is we lose the ketone. Now if we turn into a leaving group, and then do an elimination, other than after the fact I'm realizing we might get an isomer, because we can't guarantee which way elimination is going to occur, we could get the alkene. Yes? After the Grignard reaction, the two arrows coming together, that's leading to this alkoxide. The two is meaning two molecules of it. So not the order, but you use two of them, one to attack the aldehyde, one to attack the ketone. So again, this is sneakier than the type of problem I would ask you. I'm just showing this how you don't always need protecting groups. There can be sneaky ways to get to something. If anything, though, this is another, I mean, if you haven't guessed that there's going to be a Grignard reaction as part of your synthesis, then you've really not been awake the last few weeks. So you know you're going to have some form of Grignard in your synthesis. And maybe I'm trying to show you by having an ear again that there might be a Wolff-Kishner reduction in your synthesis somewhere. Or at the very least, since you haven't been asked for the mechanism of Wolff-Kishner reduction, have you? That might be a clue that that mechanism might show up. Are these the types of clues and hints that you all would like to see? Why don't we, before we do a review, go over the answers to quiz two, then we'll do a summary review for exam two, then we'll take questions, and then whatever time we have left, we'll wrap up with conjugate addition. So, quiz two, the functional groups, hemiketal, hemiacetal, all those different functional groups. Most of you, if you made mistakes, was confusing an acetal with a ketal. So an acetal, the way that we learned it in class, is some kind of functional group that derives from an aldehyde. So an aldehyde is a carbonyl that's got hydrogen on one end and something on the other, either hydrogen or carbon. Of course, if it's hydrogen, that's just formaldehyde, a one carbon aldehyde, but that's possible. Otherwise, we've got some kind of R group. When you make an acetal, you're converting the carbonyl to a double ether, but that means the hydrogen's still there. Hemiacetal means it's part ether, part alcohol. You've got one of each where the carbonyl used to be. But for the acetal or hemiacetal, there has to be a hydrogen attached to that common carbon. For a ketal or hemiketal, there can't be a hydrogen there, because a ketone doesn't have a hydrogen where the carbonyl originates. And then I don't think I took any points off of this, but if you look at your answers for your imine and enamine, realize that the nitrogen always has three bonds of some sort. So either a triple bond, a single and a double, or three single bonds. So in your imines and enamines, I was looking for whether or not you had a carbon-nitrogen double bond, which that would be the imine, or carbon-nitrogen single bond attached to a carbon-carbon double bond. So if you had that much of the structure right, you got credit, but your nitrogen, you got to make sure has three bonds of some sort to it. Now, for the mechanism question, the first mechanism question was ethanol, and was it butanal? I forget which aldehyde without looking, or which starting material. Is it butanal? Four carbon aldehyde? All right. So that's just protonate open attack deprotonate. Now, some of you must have gotten study notes or some tutoring because you had a common motif in your mechanism, which I'm going to show because it's not wrong. It's just not what I believe that we originally learned. So once you protonate that carbonyl, it is technically delocalized. Maybe we did do the shortcut, I forget now. The shortcut is, if it's delocalized, we don't really have to make a separate opening step where we're showing the resonance, because all you're doing is writing a resonance structure. You could technically show that opening at the same time you show something come into attack. As anywhere where just resonance is involved, it doesn't really count as a step. So this does save us some time writing. We'll be left with an OH group, and then there'll be a deprotonation that occurs. Remember that deprotonation, those arrows always point to the atom that's going to end up with the electrons, because arrows always show where electrons go, not atoms go. So a few of you got confused accidentally and wrote the arrows the opposite directions. Some of you also forgot what happens in this reaction process, that you start out with an aldehyde, and what we're about to get to, yes, is an intermediate, but normally it's not an isolatable intermediate. It's like we're in between a real product and reactants, you can say. This is the hemiacetal. So another round of reactions going to go on. Now, if you're having difficulty remembering the sequence, first part of it is to effectively stuff one molecule of alcohol on here. There's a second one that gets added in, but it has to have somewhere to go. So that place we make by reacting and getting rid of water. So water gets protonated. And then leaves. At that point, we have a carbocation. Which, if this was nitrogen and not oxygen, nitrogen would be able to take a lone pair, delocalize, and stabilize the carbocation. We don't have that ability with oxygen, so there's no carbonyl that can form here. Or if there is, you can't isolate it. So the next thing that happens is another ethanol attacks. And then final deprotonation to make the acetal. Questions on that mechanism? So this one, more of you got correct. It was the second one where there was some difficulty. And it is the one problem out of the whole Chem-12 sequence that if you press me hard enough, you might get me to admit that I do put on a quiz or an exam just to see you all freak out over it. That most of the rest of the problems I do because I think they're valid problems, there's something useful, there's something instructional, there's something to challenge you, make you think. And this does all that, but it also makes you freak out. And like I said, there's only one time of the year I do it, so you have to forgive me that one 8-point time. But the reason I do it is I want you all to think, that I don't want you to have this knee-jerk, oh my gosh, I've never seen this before reaction. Because that's what's going to happen with a lot of you as we keep going. It's like, I learned that reaction, but then I got to the test and I didn't know what to do with it. Or even if I say, here is the functional group, then you think, okay, so what? What do I do with it? And that's part of the hint I gave for this problem, which is, what is the functional group? What is this functional group? It's an imine. Where does an imine come from? If you're having to think more than 2 seconds about it, that means you're not ready for the exam. Where does an imine come from? What is the one functional group that we've been talking about this whole time, really, underneath all the reactions we've been doing? Carbonyl-containing groups. So think of the context where this is going on in. What carbonyl-containing group would we have? Well, an imine is where you take the oxygen of a carbonyl and you stuff a nitrogen in it instead. If you think about the overall transformation, carbon-oxygen double bond turns into carbon-nitrogen double bond. If you look at the way that the hint was written on the quiz and the what I said out loud, I basically said the reverse reaction's what happens, the reverse of forming the imine. Well, how do you form an imine? Through a modified version of protonate open attack deprotonate. How does that mean an imine reacts? By a modified version of protonate open attack deprotonate. In fact, the reverse direction is not so modified. We can almost, I think, follow it P-O-A-D, P-O-A-D. And then I forget what I said exactly to each of the three sections. The other two, I think I gave them the exact same version of the hint that I gave you all. Because I then said something about this being an acidic aqueous environment. And so if you couldn't remember the functional group name, if you couldn't remember the mechanism, if you didn't understand it was a reverse reaction, that underneath everything else, when you've got H plus and nitrogen, what's going to happen first? Protonation's going to occur. Now, again, not knowing anything else about what reaction this is, what happens when you protonate? You end up with the hydrogen on there. There are several of you that had hydrogen being attacked and then the hydrogen's not there in the product. So even if you are going to guess on your mechanisms and you're stuck, try to think fundamental chemical principles. If you add an atom, you've added it. It has to stay there. And then this acronym, protonate open attack deprotonate. The reason I gave that acronym, POAD, was so that you'd have one thing that you might guess if you forgot how it worked. All right, so we protonated. What's going to open? The only thing that makes sense to open is that double bond. Taking the hydrogen off would be going back towards where we just started from. Breaking any carbon-carbon single bond, not favorable. The double bond, that's just resonance. Attack. What do you have? Water. And then we deprotonate. What is the name of this intermediate? Because this is the last functional group that I didn't ask for in problem one. Because you had hemiketals, ketals, hemiacetals, acetals, imines, enamines, and then what you get on the way to an imine. A carbinolamine. Do we remember that term? Are you guessing you might want to remember it now? Part of the reason for pointing out this is a carbinolamine is it's functionally much the same as a hemiacetal or hemiketal. You're halfway there. This normally can't be isolated. So it's another round of protonate, open attack, deprotonate. Now what gets protonated though? Well, if we protonate the oxygen, we're going back to where we just came from. So that doesn't make sense. So again, the only thing that would make sense that could react is the nitrogen. It gets protonated again. It's this next step that I might have had a little pity on. Because you're not used to ring compounds, and you probably were expecting me to try to ask some type of trick question. But let's say something now needs to open. Well, the carbon-nitrogen bond, there'd be nothing favorable about having that break. Because even if that left a neutral nitrogen, if you're trying to make carbon minus, that's not favorable. Am I thinking that right? If a bond breaks... Yeah, you've got two possibilities. The bond breaks so that the electrons go to nitrogen, so it becomes neutral, which actually that makes a primary carbocation. Not favorable. We open the other way. You might think, well, how can that ring open? Because if you break that bond, you form a positive charge right next door to oxygen, which stabilizes that positive charge. So it looks unusual, but this is exactly what happens. If you count, we have 5 carbons in the compound. And when it first opens, we just have a carbocation, which can undergo resonance. And so our last step is deprotonation. And we end up with a combination amine aldehyde. Now, since you've already seen this problem, I'm not likely to put another one on the exam just like it. But I wouldn't be surprised if I did have another reverse reaction mechanism. So questions about this mechanism? Yeah? How would I name it? It would be 5-aminopentanal. Amino is the functional group ending for a NH2 substituent. Other questions? Yeah? When you open it, it becomes the lone pair, yes. And it becomes the lone pair of whichever atom it opens up on. All right, the last problem. We're fill-in-the-blank problems. And let's see. Oh, yes. This first one, we had something that reacts with triphenylphosphine that forms something that reacts with butyllithium, that forms something, that reacts with cyclobutanone to make an alkene. Key to solving this problem is you had to recognize it was a Wittig reaction. And really, it worked best to work backwards. Because if you look at the ketone that we've got, those four carbons of the ketone must be in the product. Whatever was not part of the ketone was part of the Wittig reagent. So if there are three other carbons there, they were part of the Wittig reagent. A Wittig reagent, from what you've learned, in lecture at least, only has one form. You have a phosphorus carbon double bond, or alternately, you could show it as phosphorus charge plus carbon minus, the zwitterion. But there's no lithium in that reagent. That's not a reaction that you've learned. Even if we had seen a lithium reagent, that would act as a Grignard reagent, not a Wittig reagent. So the lithium in that butyl lithium was just there as a base. And so the lithium doesn't actually get involved or incorporated into the reagents. The step before was before you had deprotonated to make the Wittig. And so what you would have had then is positively charged phosphorus, and then technically some kind of counter ion, which I wrote bromide only because I'm going to start with a bromide. But if you could have shown chloride, you could have shown iodide, you could have shown tosylate, mesylate, triflate, any of the sulfonates. Many of you didn't even show a counter ion. Since you had the right idea, I didn't mark off. But realize that you can't put in a bottle a plus charge by itself or a minus charge by itself. So whenever I ask for a reagent, you need to write the whole thing out. So backing up one more step, the way that Wittig reaction starts is by having something with a leaving group. So an alkyl halide or an alkyl sulfonate. Questions on this first problem? Then the last one. You had two boxes, one that didn't have any special notation on it, the other that said an organometallic reagent. And you make an alcohol. So the organometallic part, that was a clue that this was a Grignard reaction. And the organometallic reagent would therefore be a Grignard reagent. Now, I don't remember if we did exactly this problem in class or one almost like it, but we did some problem in class where I had formed an alcohol and then said, well, it turns out there's two ways that you could have made it. Because the alcohol that's in that product had to have come from the carbonyl. And then a carbon-carbon bond has to form to that carbon that the alcohol is on. But what that means is that the carbon from the benzene, maybe that was the new bond, or instead this was some kind of benzyl substrate, and it was the carbon-carbon bond the other direction that was the new carbon-carbon bond. If you pull those apart, you get two possibilities then. One is that we had phenyl magnesium bromide as our Grignard reagent and a 3-carbon aldehyde as our substrate, or put one more carbon on the benzene ring, make it the aldehyde, which means you would have one less carbon. Oh, I'm sorry. I just made the mistake that I yelled at you all not to. I counted my carbons wrong. Everybody, look what I did. I started with MgBr. I ignored that carbon there and I only put 3 in. You do need to have 4 carbons on that aldehyde. And similarly, I was going to make the same mistake here. If I've incorporated one of the carbons, I need the other three in my Grignard reagent. So I need three carbons there. But those were the two answers that I could have accepted. So questions about anything from quiz two? Then why don't we summarize the topics for the exam. So we have POD and all the things made from it. So we have acetals, ketals, hemiacetals, hemiketals, and hydrates. We have imines, which means we have carbonylamines, and enamines. We have reactions of carbonyl, which include the Wittig reaction, the Grignard reaction, and the Wolff-Kishner reduction. Let me just take a quick look through my notes. See if there's anything else that jumps out at me as important. Oh, of course, we have protecting groups. Which there are three of them. There's DHP, which makes the THP ether. There's tert-butyl dimethyl cyclochloride, which makes the TBDMS ether. And then there's ketals and acetals. We did have a discussion of the types of amines. So we had primary versus secondary versus tertiary versus the quaternary ammonium salts. We've had tautomerization. And I know I've said it already. Nothing to do with conjugation. There's only one small thing that I've left out, which is another functional group to add under the POD heading. And this is called a cyanohydrin. So you might remember halohydrins from last quarter. That's where you've got a halogen and an OH group. So it's like part of water. That's where the hydrin part of the name comes from. So cyanohydrin means you're going to create a functional group that's part water, part cyanide. Technically, in carbon terms, that's called a nitrile. Cyanohydrins can form by reacting a carbonyl compound with HCl. Or sorry, not HCl, HCN, hydrogen cyanide. Protonation can occur first. If we do it the way that we originally started, we make the resonance structure next, which, since we've got cyanide in solution, we can come back around and attack And this would be the cyanohydrin. This is on the exam because it's a minor alteration to what we would do to make a hydrate. So instead of water, we have HCN. So this example, normally I should show right when we're first learning the POD mechanism, because this is usually one of the early groups that textbooks show can form. I want to make sure, even if we didn't do it at the beginning, that we didn't skip it totally, because next quarter we'll be using cyanohydrin derivatives of carbohydrates to make one sugar from another. So you're going to see this functional group again. This is a cationic reaction. In fact, that first arrow should technically be reversible too. I started to draw a base mechanism the other day, but I hadn't found yet how to isolate the product using the base mechanism. So I'm just going to, for this section, show you the acidic one for now. Any questions on exam two material at all? Yes? Silyl ether, TBDMS chloride is the example of a silyl ether. Yes? Is nomenclature going to be on there? No. Yes?
So we don't know, we don't have to know where the hydrogen comes from, the TBAF?
No, I still haven't figured that out. I forgot to look that up over the break. So the question was asked, in the TBAF removal of a silyl ether, I still haven't shown how that mechanism works. So this would be one of the very few places on your exam that you could use the word magic, since you still don't know how it works. Meaning you don't have to show the exact mechanism. Are there any other questions? Yeah?
Can we show the mechanism from the book for cyanide?
Does it do it backwards? Does it have the cyanide attack and then get protonated?
It just has the sodium cyanide's excess so that it attacks first.
I see.
And then it has the HCN.
Either mechanism would be acceptable. Well, I took up more time than I thought I was going to, which I guess you don't mind having them review, but we don't really have time to do conjugation today, so I guess we'll end for once a couple minutes early.